Why not consider becoming a supporter of Film Network Ireland on buymeacoffee.com/FNI and sign up to become a member so you can benefit from all sorts of little extra perks. Tickets for screenings, tickets to our meetups, discounts and so much more. You'll find more about us on social media, on Facebook and Insta on @FilmNetworkIreland. As always, we are excited to bring you exclusive interviews with some of Ireland's top filmmakers, actors, and industry insiders. If you enjoy our show, why not deep dive into our back catalogue for a varied and exciting look behind the scenes of what it's actually like to work in the film and TV industry across all departments on the island of Ireland. Rap Chat is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you find your audio content relating to film and TV.
You're very welcome to FNI Rap Chat. I'm Johnny Elliott. On this episode, we're joined by two really impressive artists, that's Ross Killeen and the artist Asbestos, who will be, amongst other things, talking about their upcoming documentary film, Don't Forget to Remember. So, lads, thanks for joining us. You're very welcome. So, just for some of our viewers who might not be familiar with your work, could you give us a little brief introduction to how you arrived at the place where you are now? Did you, Ross, did you study in college? Or?
Yeah, I'm Ross from Motherland, a kind of director, run the company. We make kind of films and commercials, and we're a post house as well. But my journey to here was... through going to college in Colossia Doolig in Coolock, and I studied photography there, and then left there, ended up being an editor, and then went off travelling for a while, came back, did a bit more editing, then ended up doing some production, and then ended up directing. So done a bit of everything, really, and here I am now with the second feature documentary called Don't Forget to Remember.
Great stuff. And Asbestos, well, if anybody's ever walked around Dublin, they'd be familiar with your work at some point, even if they didn't realise it. But from watching the movie and from listening to your father, you've essentially been an artist since you were a child, really, haven't you?
Yeah, pretty much. Always been creative in different ways, and I suppose getting into art. I didn't go to art college, but it just in the early 2000s got into street art, and that's kind of where this has all kind of led to this point.
And how did you two meet? Were you friends before the movie? Did you know each other?
We'd worked together on various different things. I used to run a festival with a few friends called Offset, so Ross and myself worked on that, and also from some commercial things. But I suppose from the point of view of the film, like, we've known each other for years, but it came up in conversation between the two of us after an exhibition in the Hugh Lane Gallery in 2022, I think it was. Which was called Erase My Memories. It was a show that I put on Culture Night in the gallery to talk about the fragility of memory with, similar to in the film, blackboards that people could come in and erase. So I literally wanted people to do what they'd never do in a gallery, which is touch the art and erase it and affect it. And when Ross came in, he reacted in a way that was, which I kind of wanted people to feel uncomfortable, but couldn't erase the things, and just wrote, "Don't forget to remember," on one of the boards. Which really, I reacted to in quite a, it was very emotional because it was a charged atmosphere. But talking to him afterwards, I didn't realise up to that point that his mum had dementia and had passed away from that. And that conversation started over a period of time and developed into us talking about, well, I have this is a project, but this really isn't, it's just a short online film. If I was doing something, like, what's the story? what do we feel there is a story in this, or what story needs to be told around dementia and Alzheimer's. And a few weeks later, Ross rings me and said, "There's this real art fund. We need to get an idea together quickly." And within, 2 weeks, we had a treatment together and submitted, and then the rest is history.
Yeah. And Ross, what way did you see a role in this?
Yeah, well, it's worth saying, it was kind of post-COVID, and you haven't seen people in ages in COVID, and asbestos was doing a mural on O'Connell Street, which is still there now, opposite the Gresham Hotel. It's an amazing mural, I think, right next to the Carlton Cinema, and we just hadn't met in ages, because you just didn't see people during COVID and all that stuff, and we were chatting and you were telling me about your mum's diagnosis, and I was telling you about my mum, and I think we both had a conversation and we both kind of felt we got something from that, that sense of talking to someone about it. Because, when my mum was very ill, I didn't really talk about it, I didn't really have conversations with people. I kind of kept it in, and it was kind of like a conversation people don't really want to have. They don't know what to say to you. It's a kind of a conversation killer, really, people change the subject or whatever, and it's not like anything bad. It's just a hard thing to talk about. And maybe I didn't want to talk about it too, but we both kind of, I think you just being able to talk to someone about it who had experience with it. And we were both kind of like, maybe we need to do something in this space, or, there's something we can do together or work together on. Yeah. And then, I went in and took part in the exhibition, which I don't think you mentioned, but you're actually standing there in the room wearing a 360 mirror mask.
Yeah.
While, people are challenged with wiping out your art, So it's quite a strange experience and environment to be in. But I couldn't wipe it away. I couldn't bring myself to wipe it away. I found that really, how can I do this beautiful image, and I couldn't wipe it away, so I just wrote that, and then we caught up after, and we thought we were going to do something that was maybe a short film or, possibly some kind of installation or some art piece, but this Arts Council Fund, Real Art, came up, and we just put together an application, and then suddenly we were being interviewed, then suddenly we were shortlisted, and then suddenly we got the money, and then suddenly we had to make a film. And it all happened pretty quickly, but it was great, and very proud of what we've made. I still feel it's very close to what we intended to set out to do, and the main point of this project was to start conversations and see if we can get people talking about something that's affecting so many people and doesn't really seem to be talked about enough.
Asbestos. I think it's one of the early lines in the movie. You say, I had it written down. This is going to be true and false. It's not always going to make sense. What did you mean by that?
I think we all look at memory as this disk you put into a computer, and it's not. And I think we're understanding that more, that the way memory has changed within a family, within my understanding of it, is that the memories that I see my mum having now, I'm not sure whether they're actually her original memories or whether they're memories of people telling her about her memories. So as all of those things morph and change, and as everyone, everyone here today, if we recounted this afternoon, we would recount it in very different ways, slightly, and remember things in different ways. So memory has this malleability that I think we get, angry about it and annoyed about it when people misremember things, but I think that's just the nature of memory. And I kind of feel there's a joy of leaning into that and thinking about how, yes, everyone's memories are different, and then how they change and change and change. Because as you access a memory and then put it away again, you put away not the original memory, but you put away the facsimile. So you're facsimileing memories over and over again, and the more you remember them, the more they're altering and changing. And I think that's fascinating. And then seeing my mum during the filming process remember some things, and you're going, how on earth did she remember that? And then other things is just really a astonishing. And then just seeing how her memories change over that period of time mm. is quite shocking and fascinating at the same time. Because as an artist, it draws both personal emotions, but then also thinking about, yeah, this is something we're all doing, but this is being shown very clearly within that context.
Yeah, yeah. And again, your work, you say in the movie about you want to be vulnerable. You want to show your vulnerability.
Yeah,
all the time in it. Is that's essentially across the board in all your work, is it?
Well, I think a lot of artists do, and I think it's something that is important to have. For me, my art is important that there's a message that people can tap into themselves. So if I share something that maybe people don't necessarily share immediately, like making a film about this, hopefully it gives people a space that they can talk about it. And for me, the best art is where there's a chink of light where somebody can see themselves in it and reflect on that. And that, to me, is the most rewarding part of it.
Yeah, that's obvious. And of course, you had to capture that, Ross. That was essentially your job. You had to bring your art form to capture that. How did you go about it? How did you approach that?
My approach would, I had to be very mindful, very sensitive subject. I was very wary of going back into this world, I guess, you know. My mum had passed away and it was a long goodbye for, you know, 10 years, and it was very difficult, and I was very mindful of why am I going back and putting myself back in here and confronting this subject. But then I thought, you know, actually I have experience here and I have a voice and I can make a film that, you know, shines a light on something that isn't really seen. You know, it's a very lonely thing, and you think you're the only one going through it, and then you realise a lot of other people are going through it as well, and there's the strength and I don't know, healing in that. Mm-hmm. And my role, first and foremost, was to be really honest with Matt, with Helena, with Peter, and, you know, really explain exactly what we were hoping to do, and, you know, what the film was about, and being really clear on that. You know, mm-hmm. I believe really strongly in just being really upfront with documentary subjects, and you have to be really honest, and it's all about trust. And, you know, Asbestos' family let me into their world, and, you know, that's not a big or not a small thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So there was that, and we discussed what the film would be at length. And you know, layer one was really to just be in the room and observe, because to me the film is, it's about family, it's about the fragility of memory, but it's mainly a love story, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. To care for someone, you know, in sickness and in health, you know, I think is the epitome of true love. Mm-hmm. And that's what I really wanted to capture. Just observing those little moments between Matt and Helena, and the routine, the daily routine of caring for someone, and how, you know, it can seem really boring, but actually there's so much going on when you just actually observe and sit with it. Yeah. So there was that. And then layer two was obviously to follow Asbestos, his process, and, you know, see an artist at work and see how that all comes together and culminates in the end. And then layer three was to give Helena a strong voice in the film as well, because when people have Alzheimer's and dementia, they can quickly be forgotten, you know. And we wanted to really celebrate her life and, you know, her memories, and you know, make sure that her voice is very prominent in the film too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you certainly did that. And visually, I mean, some of the cinematography, I thought it was really cleverly used, the way it was like old camcorder footage, so mm-hmm. it becomes a memory. It felt like that. It felt like you were watching a memory. And so even in some of the sequences of your mother and father, Asbestos, you know, we knew it was present, but yeah. It felt like a memory, you know. It was really incredible, I thought.
Yeah, that was one of the first things we wrote down. I was like, I wanted to make this film that was kind of like immersive, you know, that it kind of almost confused the viewer. Is that, you know, like I was saying, it's the daily routine, so things happen again and again in the film. You see some scenes repeated, but they're slightly different, you know. So it's like the camcorder footage, mixing all the footage seemed like the right thing to do, you know, because it's fragmented and memory can be like that, you know. I think you touched on that, like people remember things differently, you know. So it felt right to mix up the formats. We've camcorder footage, we've everything from camcorder to Alexa to old VHS to, you know, archive that we found in RTE to, you know, old family archive from my family and your family, you know. So we really, you know, we had to use all the ideas we had to get it across. Your family didn't really have much archive as well, and that was one thing that I was quite concerned about at the start. So how do we tell this backstory
I think, funnily enough, not having it was maybe an advantage, because you're looking at this film and wondering what is real and what's not, what footage is from my family, what footage is archive, what footage is today or yesterday. And I think even when I was looking at it, I felt that, even though I kind of knew what was and what wasn't.
Even I think it was there's a section dealing with the Dublin and Monaghan bombings.
Yeah,
that was interesting. Your mother just narrowly missed that, did she?
Yeah, funny enough, they lived in a flat above the pub, literally next door from where we're sitting now, and had walked past, coming back from Grafton Street, and had come back a bit early and walked past like 2 minutes before the bomb went off.
Yeah.
So she'd gone back to get a package. My brother and I wasn't even born, but my brother was in the pram, so it was like a month and a half before I was born. Yeah. And she was literally putting the key in the door next door to here, and it went off. But even in that part of the film, a lot of people look at it and go, oh yeah, the Dublin and Monaghan bombings, but we kind of were a little bit ambiguous about the story as well, because we felt it is a significant thing, but it's also making it flow into the film and not be the whole part of the film, which it could have taken over, was important, because then it's just a memory that's there and you're into the next scene and then you're like, what was that? I think people kind of react to it in an interesting way, and that's a credit to Ross's filmmaking as well. You taking that and mastering that in a way that is a story, but it doesn't become the whole part of a story.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think as well, Ross, at that moment, before we realise it is the Dublin and Monaghan bombing, we hear Helen's voice, but we're looking at paving stones on the street. And there's a sense of familiarity, but also disorientation.
Yeah.
So we recognise the paving stones, but we can't quite make sense of where it is or what it is, you know. And it really, it kind of gives us a sense of the condition to a degree, you know, to a slight degree, you know. Moving on to the exhibition of the blackboards.
Yeah.
Because again, we go back to memory. When I was in college, most of what I learned in college is just gone. You know, don't need it anymore. It's been
all there
somewhere. But watching the movie, I was reminded of a quote I stole from Jacques Derrida about deconstructionism. When he was talking, he said, I'm paraphrasing, but it was something along the lines of, there is no pure state of making. We are always working with ideas and thoughts and remaking. And I thought both of you really engaged, were really a part of that process in that whole sequence that dealt with the blackboards.
Yeah.
Was that deliberate? Because obviously you're taking a physical manifestation of a memory, which is a photograph. And then it almost goes 360 where, Ross, you've just captured that whole process of you replicating that, and that's destruction. Could you talk us through that process?
I think it's interesting you saying that, like even focusing on the fact that these were photographs. Like in essence, a lot of people look at the film and they look at the blackboards and go, oh, you don't want to destroy this drawing of a blackboard because it's beautifully painted, drawn. But it's just a reproduction of the photograph and a reproduction of a memory. So I think your point is really interesting about how the best thing to do would be to show the photograph, but then do I want to destroy that? So I'm kind of not even getting into destroying that, but creating art to be destroyed is something that people don't really think about. And then showing it in an exhibition space in Mazer's Gallery was very much about giving people the sense that these were prized objects, but then kind of pulling the rug from underneath them and going, that's not the point of it. The memories will endure far longer, and actually collective memory is really important, because we store memories in each other, in family, and in kind of the way we remember things. And to me, the act of destroying them wasn't destruction. When people didn't want to destroy them, I was more upset. I really wanted them to be completely messed up. And the one that was on South William Street is completely gone, covered in graffiti and tags and pliers and everything. And to me, that's almost the most beautiful one, because I remember the image, and other people do, but you almost remember it more because of the fact that it has been changed, or people have forced change onto it. Yeah. And yeah, those memories are still there, and the act of actually taking out the photographs and chatting about them and sharing those things. And we all have family photos, we all have thousands of photos in our phones, but how often do we go back or ask who was that, or remember who that was? So those memories are important to an important thread through the film, and challenging people to do something that they're uncomfortable with is an interesting way for them to confront their own relationship with memory.
And of course, then Russ, I mean, when we look at the destruction of the piece, the blackboards, I mean, they're exposed to the elements, and again, as a viewer, you're watching that going, no, don't do this, you know, don't wreck this. But then, in a sense, you're immortalizing it, because you're capturing everything. So they're never really.
That line at the end is, memories just can't be destroyed, you know. They live on forever. They live on in other people, you know. So as much as we destroy them, they can't be destroyed. Or as much as they change or get altered, they can't be destroyed. And I think that's a really powerful message. And hopefully that's what people walk away from the film with, you know. We're trying to find, like, I mean, it's a terribly sad subject. There's no getting away from it. It's an awful thing, you know, but we're trying to find some hope and some light in it, and some way of it's happening, and we have to kind of confront it, and we have to try and find a way to talk about it, and try and find a way to make sense of it, and that's what we're trying to do with the film.
And how you were obviously heavily across the editorial process. How did that go?
Yeah, I worked with Vinnie McEntee, who's was a brilliant editor, and I used to be an editor, so I love being involved in the edit process, much to the annoyance of the editors. You know, like, the edit was, you know, when I was, the way it worked initially, I basically spent about 6 weeks just hanging out myself with Matt and Helena in the apartment, just filming with Sony, FS6 camera, you know, and just getting them used to me being around and the idea of being filmed, and you know, and I was filming for long days there, and kind of in my head going, there's no film here, no one's going to want to watch this, you know. You know, have these kind of moments where you kind of go, oh God, what am I doing? I can't do this. This isn't working, you know. And but then I started really bringing that footage back into the edit and playing around with it, and we kind of came into this kind of the crosswords, and how you see in the film how the crosswords actually become part of the narrative, you know, the words that they're trying to figure out. And it kind of, once I hit on that, it was like, okay, that's it, you know. And then Narian, who's our cinematographer, you know, once Helena and Matt were used to it and, you know, comfortable, Narian came in, he kind of replaced me and shot with the Alexa, you know, and captured some beautifully cinematic moments. And that's when the film really started to come together. And then we brought it in with Vinny in the edit, and we just started playing around with all these things. And like, it was kind of, the idea always was like act one, act two, act three would almost be quite similar, but slightly different each time. You know, it's like this idea of, that I said earlier, of the routine, the scenes where they're on a bench, and one time it's Matt and Helena, another time it's asbestos and your dad, and another time it's asbestos and his mum. And it's just like these repeated scenes that are slightly different. And kind of once I started mapping that out, it all started making sense. And, you know, Asbestos came to view the edit. It was actually the night of the Dublin riots, which was interesting because our office is actually on Hill Street in Dublin 1.
Oh, yeah.
So I was, you know, it's not unusual to hear sirens and stuff around there, so I wasn't thinking anything of it. But we were sitting in the edit suite, and obviously it's a highly, you know, emotional thing to watch such a personal film. And, you know, and I'm always worried when the subject of the film comes to watch it for the first time. Are they going to hate it? Are they going to want everything changed? Are they going to, like, all this stuff that I've been working on for ages to perfect? But, yeah, we were midway through the viewing and I started getting loads of texts from people going, lock the doors, you know, put up the... there's a riot outside. And I was trying to, like, not interrupt the viewing, and he was like, Ross being a bit rude, he's on his phone the whole time. But you know, at the end of the viewing,
well, I was, you also can explain, well, I was also expecting as well, I think I was kind of maybe catastrophizing in some ways beforehand, wondering, okay, this is going to be really hard to watch, this could be really difficult to, and thinking, okay, I'm going to be an emotional wreck afterwards. And actually there was a lot of humor, like within the first few seconds of the film opening, you hear my dad going bum 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 bum, and my partner Joe and like Ross notices, like I do it as well when I'm thinking, I'm going like bum 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 bum, and it just, I just started laughing. It's like, yeah. And that just set the scene for me personally. There was like little moments of levity, moments of humor, moments of lots of kind of things in it that made me smile. I think that's important for people to understand that this isn't a film, it is emotional, but I was so happy that it had a calmness and a lack of things happening as well. It's that kind of that moment. I really like films that are kind of observational and have a sense and drama where very little happens, but you can just invest in the slowness of it and just understand those characters. And I loved that about seeing it for the first time, that edit.
Yeah.
That it, there's a long shot of my dad putting up my mum's zip in her coat, and it's probably like a minute or 2 minutes long. I don't know how long it is, but it just feels like a moment that you can...
Yeah, trying to leave space for the viewer to kind of just sit with it and, you know, have that space in the film to think, you know.
Yeah.
It's worth saying, Mick Mahon worked with us on as an edit consultant, and myself and Vinny, you know, we'd get a cut to a certain point and then show it to Mick, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, you just put that there, why don't you put that over there, and what about that? And it was brilliant just to have another voice in the room that we could bounce off. And Mick's amazing editor, and I worked with him on the previous film, but it was brilliant to have his voice in the room with us as well, you know. Just someone coming from, you know, who hadn't been on set, who hadn't been in the thick of the offline, who can just look at it completely impartially and, and give us some sage advice, basically, which helped us immensely.
And how did your own family react to it? Because obviously it's a subject close to their hearts.
Yeah, I mean, I was wary of that. Like, my dad, my sister and my brother all came along to the premiere in Diff, and my aunties were my mum's sisters, and, you know, they all reacted really well, you know. They, I guess, yeah, probably felt something similar to me in that, do we want to go back, you know, but there's a catharsis in it, and I think definitely there's been healing for me in terms of making it, and it's my way of talking about it, and my way of maybe making up for the conversations I didn't have back in when it was happening. Reacted very well, I think. Yeah,
because in the movie that isn't a concern of yours. I think you asked the question, who was she?
Yeah.
There's a regret there, isn't there? Because you wish you had more conversations.
Wish I had more conversations. I think it's also a deeper question around kind of the nature of people's relationship with their parents and how you see somebody as mother or father. You don't see them as Matt or Helena. And as we started exploring the film, I didn't have the opportunity to ask a lot of questions of my mom, but my dad could certainly fill in on certain things and learn more about that. But I think there's just a fascination for me around that time in the 60s and 70s where she grew up in South Loss Road in Irishtown and Ringsend, and leaving your parents' house and then getting married and moving in with your husband, like there's a sense of very little identity being attached to women at that time. Like you became daughter and became wife, and the gap of that person when she was 18, 19 or in her 20s and who she was, like that question like has rebounded in my head, and thinking about kind of all of the aspirations and dreams and hopes that she could have had, but then suddenly becomes a mother and wife, and then for a lot of women that just changed their lives completely and they stopped being the Helena or the another, and it just sparked that in my mind, making it that this is something I'd never really considered in to that extent.
Yeah, do you think that's where your creative side comes from, your mother, because she was a pretty good dressmaker, obviously, in the film.
Yeah, and I think she's always had that creative side. And same with my dad. My dad is back painting now again, and he has kind of creative side. My godmother is really inspirational. So I think to me, creativity is a desire to question. That's kind of the core of it, and kind of craft layers on top of that. So. There was always that sense of creativity in the house, and neither were artists, neither of them were like as obsessed with creativity that I am, but it was definitely encouraged.
Your father, his role in the film,
there's a
beautiful sense that I don't want to use the word duty, because it seems more than that, but he sits there. But again, what we discussed with the crosswords, he sits there, and it's almost like he's trying to probe memories in our mind all the time. Is that his function? Is that his day to day existence? Or?
It's frustration as well. Yeah. I think there's like been doing a crossword with somebody with Alzheimer's is a Sisyphean task to do it. But I think there's also a desire to maybe keep her mental acuity up by helping that, but Alzheimer's is a slow degenerative disease without a cure, so it's as much as you can help somebody and care for somebody, it's inevitable. Like I describe in the film as being a bullet coming towards you in slow-mo, so there's nothing you can do about that, but he's amazing person and amazing carer, and he's doing that because he loves my mum, but that doesn't mean it's not difficult and not frustrating, and I think the crossword is he's encouraging her, but he's also probably going, God, I wish she was actually able to do this.
What are we in now?
We're
35. Okay. And you're you also mentioned in the movie that your work has become therapeutic. Did you find that as well, Ross, that it had been a form of therapy for you?
Definitely.
Yeah.
And the previous film was as well, Love Yourself Today, that I did, because I made that just after my mum passed and put a lot of emotion and grief into that too. So, it feels like, it's definitely been cathartic and healing, and in many ways, this film is about Asbestos Mother, but it's about my mum too. In a way, it's like it's about the idea of a mother as well, you know. Very much there's parallels between the process, your process being healing, and the process of making the film is a very similar thing. Yeah.
Because when we're looking at the image of you standing on the ladder and you're looking over the exhibition, and you can see you're a man in pain at that point, you know?
Yeah, it was just a realization. It was just hitting me, all of these images. I don't know what was going through my mind, but it was just quite overwhelming. And I think it was more to do, in some ways it was to do kind of with my dad and kind of what he's going through, and also these are memories that she can't access anymore, can't touch on. So it's just that frustration and that anger as well of how it's stripping somebody of their memories.
There was a really, for me, the most touching moment was when your mother is assisting you in hanging a memory on a wall. The chalk that will be erased, that will go. Was a, yeah. I mean, that must have been, that must have stored some really...
Weirdly, it was kind of the opposite. It was a really fun, enjoyable day. And I think that's part of the film, as much as the film, a lot of the experience of filming it was actually full of a lot of joy and laughs, and even bringing her down to her old house. She remembered like a shop on the corner and the post office across the road. And I was like, how on earth is she remembering these things? Mm-hmm. Really abstract things, but didn't remember. Yeah. And yeah, just even trying to be silly and be joyous around her and just help her and enjoy the situation. She's not sure what's happening completely, but just to treat her in a way that's respectful to that and just get her involved in these things. And
yeah,
it was, that was actually really enjoyable. So
okay. Sorry, lads, is there anything you just wanted to discuss?
Well, I just would like to say a big thanks to the Alzheimer's Society, and in particular the DCCN group, which is Dementia Carers Campaign Network, a group of people who were carers for loved ones and have now joined together to form a group that is an advocacy group. And I guess they just are available to talk to each other and to talk to anyone, and they're wonderful people who really helped us when it came to researching the film. You know, I wanted to make sure the film wasn't, I don't know, twee or, you know, patronizing or, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, sugar coated or anything like that. You know, we wanted it to be real, but we wanted it to be dignified and all those kind of things as well. So they were really helpful, and their voices are actually in the film towards the end. You can hear all these voices. So it was that idea that there's lots of other people in this, going through this experience, you know, and then sharing those, having those conversations is important. But yeah, the Alzheimer's Society and DCCN really got behind the film. We're releasing the film September 6th. It's in conjunction with World Alzheimer's Month, which is the month of September. And we're hoping to really just screen it in as many places around Ireland throughout the month of September. There's a website, don't forget to remember, film.com, where all the information on all the places it's screening is on that website.
Yeah.
And then we're on Instagram and all that stuff as well. But yeah, hopefully a lot of people can go to see it.
Yeah, so you heard that. Go see the movie. It's the sixth of September. I know it's the IFI,
IFI Lighthouse in Dublin, Palace in Galway, in the Gate Cinema in Cork. We're in Drogheda, Navan, Ennis. We're up in the QFT in Belfast. I'm after forgetting something.
Kenny,
we're doing one-off screenings. I'm going to say this through the NTE, which is the Nighttime Economy. We've teamed up with them. We're doing a special event screenings where we'll do Q&A and some exhibiting some of the chalk drawings. And we're doing that in conjunction with the NTE, which is the local nighttime economy council in each of these towns. But we're doing a screening in Kilkenny in the Watergate on Friday the 13th, and then the Triskell in Cork on Sunday the 15th. And then we're trying to lock in others. We're definitely doing one in Buncrana and Donegal, and then trying to lock in Sligo and Limerick and various other cities at the moment.
Okay, that's great. So you heard that, go see it, because it really is an exceptional piece of work. It's not just a film about Alzheimer's, it's about memory, it's about love, it's about family, it's about joy, and it's about art. So you really should get and go and see it, because it's quite a fine piece of work. So lads, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thank you.